morning. Welcome to Tony Talks Humanity Matters. I'm Tony Julian, your host today, and I have a special guest who, much like myself, is a true survivor. Her life has been upended, and she reached out so she can help inspire others through sharing her story of abuse by what she calls the nicest guy you'll ever meet. The good news is we're here to talk about your healing journey. So I would like to welcome you, September Burton, to my show.
Hi, Tony. Thank you so much. I love your show. I love everything you're doing. It's an honor to be on your show. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm really, really pleased you're here. There's one of the things that I think about when people are willing to share their story, as I have, we have a lot in common, is that it takes a certain amount of bravery. It really does, because part of it is we're having to share our past and the things that have damaged us in a way, and maybe that's too strong of a word, but there's so much to overcome. And so what I love is your story of, and where I'd like to start is talk about the frame of reference of what has happened in your life and why you're on my show, what you can share with us about that. And then as we go through it, move forward into some of the real positive aspects of how you've overcome it, how you are healing, and healing is a process, right? And those types of things to share with people so that we can inspire them. And as you and I talked about on the phone as well, is so many of these things, you don't have to be a domestic abuse survivor or other types of abuse survivors to get a lot out of this conversation, because we all as women need this. Like as long as there is not pure gender equality throughout the world, all women need to hear this.
Absolutely.
Yes. So with that, let's start at the beginning of your story. What would you like to share?
So frame of reference, basically I was in a relationship with an attorney. We had several children together. We were together for about 5 years. And at the end of the relationship, you know, he started recording me all day, every day, and using those recordings to learn my triggers, really study, you know, my biggest areas of insecurity and really learn how to manipulate me. And get me, and he pushed me past my breaking point. And he, you know, it was all very intentional because he knew that he was done with the relationship because I stopped seeing him as a god. There's a funny meme out there.
Shame on you.
No. Yeah. there's a funny meme out there that says that my ex and I split up for religious differences. He thought he was God. I didn't. So when I started seeing, you know, and I started saying, I have needs too, you know, my needs need to be met, things like that. He couldn't handle that. So he set it up. He, like I said, he's an attorney and he knew exactly what he needed to get me to say, what he needed to get me to do in order to basically go to court and get full custody of our kids and leave me with absolutely nothing. He took the home, he took the cars, he took the money, he took it all. I got literally nothing. He left me with a permanent spinal injury, but the courts ruled that I was guilty of domestic violence and he was not. And then after the separation, he started stalking. He was hacking into my home security system, making it so that he could turn off my system, unlock my front door, and literally just walk in without anybody having any idea. He, you know, all kinds of stalking behaviors. And so finally, after about 7 months of being stalked, I fled. I just simply couldn't take it, the fear anymore. I took something called a mosaic threat assessment, which is you can get online. So if you're in a situation where you're fearful, you can kind of use this to assess your level of threat. And I hired a domestic violence investigator and she told me to take this assessment and he scored a 9 out of 10. And I already knew intuitively that I was in danger, that my life was in extreme danger at this point. And so when I saw that, like that quantitative actual number on the screen, I was like, I got to get out of here. And so I had some friends help me out. We got me out within a few days and got myself to safety. He did find me. I went to Hawaii at first. He did find me in Hawaii. And so I've since left there and am still, at this point, still living in hiding. So that's kind of the background, the main points of the story right there.
Wow. So the things that you're bringing up are psychological abuse, physical abuse, financial abuse.
Yes.
What other ones that can we identify?
There was some spiritual abuse. there was sexual abuse. At one point, I actually went through, I have a therapist that I still work with, and she pulled out just a list of every type of abuse that somebody can do to another person. And we went down the list and we checked off every single item. There wasn't a single one on there that didn't happen during that relationship. So that was kind of an eye-opening thing.
That's incredible. So, my heart is just goes out to you. That's a lot to go through. And you're a strong woman for really removing yourself from that situation. And I can imagine the level of fear. I've had some similar things go on in my life. Not quite like that. But if you look at like all those different parts, and what about him do you think made him want to continue with the stalking after he got what he wanted? Like, was it just to punish you? Was he like sociopathic in a way? What was going on, do you think, at that point?
Well, I think when you think about like the 7 months of recording all day, every day while still sleeping next to me, talking about the future, saying I love you, things like that's sociopathic behavior right there. So right. Yes, you're getting into some of that. You know, I'm obviously not going to diagnose someone. Mm-hmm. I'm not a mental health professional, but I just know my experience. And I do think that we are getting into some sociopathic, pretty scary, intensive stuff. And what made him want to keep doing it, I think, is control. Stalking is about control. And I think that's one of the misconceptions. People think that, oh, a stalker just wants to be with this person. No, a stalker wants to be with that person so that they can control that person. And so when you're talking about stalking, you know, he hired a mental health professional during the court investigation stuff while it was all going on. And she got on the phone with me and she was telling me how much he loves me and what a soft spot he has for me. And I was like, okay, you have a PhD in psychology. He is destroying my character in court. I mean, ripping me to shreds, and he still has the capacity to give you the impression that he's still in love with me and you're not picking up on this. Like, that is scary. I mean, that's just scary right there.
Right. To trick a professional who should recognize these things is he's good, yeah. Right? He's really good at this, clearly.
He's really very scary good at this.
So, well, you talked about fear a little bit, and that must have been horrifying, terrifying. How did you start to find your grounding, your bearing, okay, I'm going to make changes. I'm going to, like you in our phone conversation, use the term flee, which is you are afraid for your life. Like, what helped you kind of think about, okay, I'm going to start here and pick myself up? And like, where was that turning point for you? What kind of techniques or tips or thoughts did you have that helped put you in that situation?
Listening to my intuition, really trusting my intuition on a very, very deep level in a way that I think I've always trusted my intuition, but this really has solidified the importance of trusting that, those gut instincts. Another thing was I had women supporting me. I had women backing me up. The reason that I was able to flee and get out the way that I did was because I was big in the networking world. I love networking. And I had been at an event and there was a woman there and she saw, you know, everybody could see that I wasn't okay. I would put on this smile and I would try to pretend that I was okay, but it's pretty easy to see past that, especially when you know somebody. And so we were at this event and she pulled me aside and she said, look, I've experienced stalking. I know what you're going through. She said, I know people. And if you need help, I'm a phone call away. And I thought, okay. And just kind of thanked her and went on my way. And then it was right about that time when I did that mosaic threat assessment. It was after she had said that, just a couple of days. And I saw that, I knew I was in danger. And I finally just called her. I couldn't take it anymore. I said, I need help and I need help now. And so she really was one of the biggest players in getting me out of there. So the support of women, that's really kind of one of my foundational pieces at this point, because of everything that I've been through, because I healed with women backing me up and supporting me. The support that you get when you reach out to other women, especially other women who've experienced it and can empathize with you and understand what you're going through, there's nothing in the world like it. So I think that when women heal together, there is just this magical, intense power that it's like, it just makes me want to like jump out of my skin because it's so cool, you know? So getting a support system of women in place is really important.
I really love that. And especially what you say about intuition. And I think for women, and this is just what I've seen through my life, my observations, is that women were kind of taught to suppress that. Not kind of taught. We are taught to suppress that. And the way our society is set up is it's male dominated. It has been for thousands of years, and women have been considered to be the supporters of men, and that I'm gonna get a little bit into religion here. I don't really want to take it down this path, but basically women came from the rib of Adam, and we are a subset. We're really not a subset. And I think when you look at these types of abuse, it's directly proportional to the amount of gender equality there is in that particular part of the world. And when there's equality, there's less abuse. And when there's no equality, there's all kinds of horrific things that happen in other countries, especially. But I like these women that are in these other countries, they're like, intuition, what's that? It is completely shut off. But you and I, we go through our lives and we hear our like higher self talk, and we hear when we're in touch with that. Like I am also a clairaudient, so I do hear a lot, and that can be considered intuition or something very spiritual. And I think like we all have that ability, but we shut it off, and we all have those answers if we listen to it. And if we hear little flags, like what is it about us women that where we will just, we'll disregard that. Oh, because he does that, he did that for me. So therefore that part of what I'm not happy with or makes me feel small doesn't apply, or tend to make excuses for people. And I know I work with a lot of women, and I have actually a group, it's called Group Hug on Facebook, where I have about over 500 people, I think 400 or 500 people. And most of them are women. And it's just a place of support and lifting people up. And there's so much power in that. It's only probably about 6 months old, but I'm watching it evolve. And I had a text the other day, one woman said, "Thank you for helping me get my self-esteem back." Oh. Nice. So, the things that we do, September, like the impact of this conversation that we're having, and the work that you go out and do, and people that you talk to, and the women that you're talking about in this like support of women, these groups, and just the impact that you make. You could say one thing to one person and that could change their life. So we women do need to stick together. I am a huge believer of that. We can't wait for governments to control things. We can't wait for men to control things. We can't wait for anybody to make these changes except for right here. Right? Each individual person. And coming together is super powerful.
I think it's super powerful because we encourage each other's intuition. And I think that when we listen to our intuition, that's when our whole worlds change. If I had listened to my intuition about this specific relationship, I would have gotten out of it within probably 2 months of getting into it, if I had listened to my intuition.
I was going to ask you about that. Looking back, were the signs there? Your intuition was telling you this isn't a good deal for me.
Yeah, absolutely. My intuition was telling me the red flags were not red flags. They were flashing neon lights.
I always say that, if we don't learn things the first time, God will whack us upside the head. Like, okay, get this. Like you've been through this. Not that you have, but I don't know. Were there other relationships in your life, do you think, that might've kind of been down this path before?
Yeah, absolutely. I was married. I got married at 24 years old, and he was definitely on the spectrum of narcissism as well. And so, I did it twice. But what worked for me the second time, actually getting out of the second relationship, was that I found a therapist who was a woman who's supportive of intuition and, all of those kinds of things. And so that was really the key for me. She was really the driving force behind, okay, I am being abused and I don't need to be abused. And I want to get away from this so that I stop being abused in my life. And so,
yes.
Finding a good therapist, I'm a huge fan of that.
So between a therapist, supportive women, and listening to your intuition, those are like the three main things that have helped you.
Yeah.
Do you meditate? Like, how do you tap into your intuition? What works for you?
I do meditate. I do a centering exercise that I do at least once a day. Sometimes my goal is to get up to 3 times a day just because it's so powerful. But it's, for some reason, I think that we kind of do a little bit of self-sabotaging where, you're not quite ready to be that powerful yet. And so I don't do 3 times a day yet, but I do the meditation. It's incredibly important to me. And there's such a huge difference in my world and in the way that things happen when I do it, as opposed to when I stop doing it for a little while. Another thing I do is breathing exercises, because one of the things that I've learned is that victims don't breathe. Especially when you have PTSD, which, you know, if you've been through a situation like this, you tend to develop complex PTSD. And I had a friend who was a yoga instructor at the juvenile detention center in town. And she told me, she was the one that really brought this to my attention. She told me that when she would go do these yoga sessions with these kids, she could always tell who had PTSD, because they would usually kind of sit back in the corner and not want to participate so much. But then she would start doing the breathing exercises and they would start to yawn. And she said that people with PTSD, if they watch other people breathe, they yawn because we don't breathe. And so when we see other people doing it, that's like a reflexive thing, like, oh, my body does need oxygen.
Right.
Breathing exercises are really, really important, because I still hold my breath, and I notice myself doing it frequently. I hold my breath. So.
Yeah, I do. I do find myself either sometimes holding my breath or sometimes shallow breathing, which actually, I have a personal training background. The way that the muscles constrict in our body, it just doesn't allow any oxygen in. It actually gives us different imbalances and things in our body from a physical standpoint as well over time. And I do have PTSD, or I have worked through that as well. And yeah, you know, it's like when you're always on edge, you're always waiting for something to happen. Yeah. You don't breathe. It's just you're ready to respond and being on. Isn't it exhausting, September, to be on alert all the time? Oh,
exhausting. It really is.
Exhausting. How are you sleeping? Are you sleeping better?
I slept really well in Hawaii. Where I am now, I'm not sleeping as much, and I'm not sure why. When I fall asleep, I sleep fine through the night. I have a lot of vivid dreams. Last night I dreamt about lions, which I actually think the lions was really, really cool, because they were kind of watching, observing. And I think that that's a sign of power and courage and things like that. So I took that to be a very positive thing, but yeah, a lot of dreams, a lot of, but I talk to friends who do dream interpretations and things like that. So I'm always like analyzing the dreams, like, what does this mean? Is this good? Does this mean I'm on the right track? Kind of stuff. So love that kind of stuff, but that all goes back to intuition.
Sure. It really does. And do you journal?
No, not right now. That's another one that I know I want to be doing, but I'm not there yet. Not sure why. I think that me sitting down, one of the things is I'm always on the go. Like, I never watch TV. I don't watch movies. I just don't sit down. I'm always moving forward, doing something. And so for me to sit down long enough to journal that's asking too much.
Yeah, sure. Well, and I think too, you know, I'm a longtime journaler, but I'll go through phases where I'll feel like it'll serve me, and like, oh, I need to write down those dreams that I had, and I know they were very meaningful and very vivid, or got a visit from a guide or whatever. And then other ones, someone will tell me something very deep, and I'm like, I needed to know that, or I knew that, I suspected that, and that's my validation. You know, someone will come into a dream. Like, I have a girlfriend who's super sick. She's just been bedridden with MS for a couple of years, and she said something to me in this dream, and I just looked at her and I said, I know. And then her husband said something like, I know. So it was cool. So this journaling, sometimes like it shouldn't be a chore. I kind of feel like it should be organic and when it serves us. And we know, like, I know I'm in this phase right now where I should start writing again. I should start journaling a little bit, just dreams or thoughts or things like that. And what I love about that, and you know, it may or may not be for you personally, you're doing a great job at working through things. But I think for some people, like for me, when I've journaled and I've looked back, I'm like, wow, I've grown so much in this year. Or like, oh, that's so interesting. I've developed, you know, my intuition. It's so much stronger, and I'm listening to this and I'm hearing that. And I'm, you know, you can look back and see progress, which I love, because, you know, I kind of think like we could look at where we are right now, and we can think, oh, in a year, I want to be here. Like for you, you want to have your children back, and you want to have your life back, and the things that were taken from you that are yours, that that you deserve are not there right now. And so like we can envision these things moving forward, but looking back, sometimes we kind of lose track of where we were. Well, like we know where we were, but our mindset, and when we journal, we can capture, I feel like, especially when we hand write, I feel like we capture parts of our spirit that would only be there if we hand write it, you know?
I completely agree with you that you do. There's something about handwriting it out that's very special. And then I also think that it unclogs maybe some of your blockages and things like that. Like if you just keep writing and writing, it can help unclog some of that stuff. So I have done, there's a protocol, that's not the word I'm looking for, but protocol, a system of journaling called Morning Pages. Have you heard of that one?
I've not. September, why don't you explain that to me and our listeners? Morning Pages.
There's an artist, and she wrote a book, and her name is escaping me at the moment. I'm sorry. But anyway, she has a protocol called Morning Pages. And what you do is first thing in the morning, as soon as you wake up, you write 3 pages. It's front, back, front. And you just write, and you just simply force yourself to keep writing. And she says that, you know, about the first third is fairly easy. And then the second third is, it becomes a little bit more challenging. But that last final page is where you start to unblock. And that's where, and you're just writing any random thing that comes to you, you know, kind of try to focus on like the positives and the gratitude and things like that. But it's really just about unblocking yourself. And I've definitely done that over the years at different points in my life. And it's powerful. It's very powerful.
That's another great, great tool, you know, for people to explore, I think. And I've heard of people sitting down in the morning and just like religious, having that regimen and just religiously, like really religiously writing, and that it does unblock a lot. And it's interesting to see how it changes people's mindsets. I feel like, and this is maybe a little bit off topic, a little bit, but do you feel like when people do that, it puts them in a better state of being able to cope, like with stress of the day and just kind of normal life things? Or our perspective kind of puts us on a higher, like bigger picture, right? Instead of like getting into the nits and being concerned about these little things and spending all this energy on things that maybe don't matter all that much. Do you feel like it is in itself centering and grounding?
I definitely think it's centering and grounding and elevating and all of those kinds of things. I think that, you know, acceptance is a huge part of it. If you're angry, it's perfectly okay to write angry. Like there's nothing wrong with that. You never have to go back and read it. Nobody else ever has to read it. You can burn it if you want to. I do think that there's a lot to be said for gratitude and for looking forward and focusing on that. It rewires your brain. But there's nothing like, except if you're sad and you're sobbing as you're writing this page, just accept that that's where you're at right now. And that's perfectly okay. And I think that acceptance of where you're at right this moment is a huge piece of moving on to the next phase. It's okay to be where you're at. If you're really angry right now, be really, really angry right now. It's totally okay. And then once you get past those emotions of that anger, and then you come to a different place. And I think it gets easier to get to that place of gratitude and that place of, you know, positive mindset and things like that. So.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And yeah, I mean, we're really taught, like, you know, with me growing up is, you know, we're supposed to be quiet. We're supposed to not be angry. We're supposed to be happy. We're supposed to accept everything. You wrote something to me, which I loved in your email to me. You said, "I believed it must be my fault that I was being abused. And if I were only better, smarter, skinnier, quieter, wealthier, and so many more errs, you'd stop abusing me and we could be happy together." And so much of that is like our emotions. You weren't allowed to show any of those emotions. You know, those, you couldn't be angry. You couldn't be frustrated. You couldn't be, you had to fit into this very small little non-realistic sliver of what he felt like was perfect. And that happens so much in society. So I love acknowledging our feelings. They're all our feelings, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and you can't lose an argument by saying, "I feel this way." I think this is a great tool for women. "I feel this way." Nobody can argue that, because, well, wait a minute. No, I'm not talking about fact. I'm saying, "I feel this way." And you can't argue how I feel. Only, and one of my hot buttons, I have a member of my family who always used to tell me how I felt. I'm like, no, no. And he was a male sibling. I'm like, no. You can't tell me how I feel. You can't tell me how I think, what I think. That's not your jurisdiction. Right. So we women need to get that in our heads right away. Teach your daughters.
Right. And that's exactly what my abuser would do. He would tell me how I feel. He would tell me what I'm supposed to think and what I'm supposed to do. But with him, it was like living with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And I never knew on any given day who was coming home and what he wanted me to be, like with the errs that we just talked about.
Yeah.
It was a moving target. It was different every single day. And I never knew, am I supposed to wear more makeup today? Am I supposed to not wear makeup today? Am I supposed to, I never knew what it was that he was going to want me to be that day. And so that's part of the confusing, and that's control. It's confusing your mind is all about trying to control you. So.
Yes. Last night I was watching this program that was really interesting. And it was about, I think it was a company called Nexius, something like that. And it was kind of cult-like, but it was these women especially would be brought into this organization under the pretense of, you're going to be your best self. You're going to be this, you're going to be that. And lots of training and, to really like push through pain, you only grow when you're uncomfortable. And so it taught this group of women, and some men were there too, but it taught them to disregard their intuition, to disregard their feelings, to just listen to this leader of this organization who was probably had one of the highest IQs in the world. This man was just really brilliant. So people were so impressed with them. And it turned out that there was a secret society where these women were just fighting their intuition, tamping it down, saying, I don't feel comfortable. There's something wrong with this. This man would control their diet. They became emaciated. They were exhausted. They were only allowed to sleep. So sleep deprivation, sleep like 2-3 hours a night. And the worst part, the way this program, and it's a series, so I have way more to watch. The way that it ended was a photograph of a brand. These women were branded to be followers and devoted followers of this man for life. And there were sexual things that went on, of course, but they were like physically branded. This is in the United States. This isn't in some country where they do like genital mutilation and things. This is here. And these women allowed it. And I was just like, oh my goodness. So yeah, so much of this is this indoctrination of disregarding that intuition and being isolated from people that live, a more balanced life. And it's just absolutely crazy. So now moving forward, what keeps you motivated now in spite of everything that you've been through?
What keeps me motivated is getting my life back. Knowing there's a knowing in me. I worked with an energetic type healer recently, and she was like, I want you to do a little bit of homework and study the word hope and see what the word hope means. And the definition that I found for the word hope that I absolutely love is confident expectation. And I was like, that's so much better than we think that hope is like some fluffy, no substance to it type of a word. But when you think of it as confident expectation, I can say, I hope I get my kids back because I confidently expect that I will be with my children again very soon. And so that's a big part of what keeps me going. Recently, I've started taking back every piece of my life that I can take back. Right now, I'm taking it back. And that's been a big thing. That's a very recent thing. It's definitely, this healing journey is very much a journey. And so taking back the pieces of my life that I can take back right now. So, another thing that I've really discovered is like feminist poetry. And there are some feminist poets out there who their stuff just like pierces straight to the center of my heart. And I'm like, yes,
Wow. Cool.
It just makes you feel like you're just on fire and like you can fight this patriarchy and we don't have to be held down anymore. And yes, I am powerful. Yes, I am a woman and I am as powerful as it comes. There's one that I really love and I'm just going to paraphrase it, but it's basically saying, there are dragons in this world, but what they don't know is that we'll always be ready with coal wedged between our lips and a match poised between our fingers. And I was like, that's because for me, part of the reason that I speak is because my power is in my voice. And so speaking out and helping other women and hopefully inspiring other women to get out of these abusive relationships and know that they deserve a better life than this. That's a big part of my power and my taking my power back and restoring my life. And so I love that one because it's like, yes, I will breathe fire, and I am breathing fire by speaking out and by sharing my story. Yes, I went through hell. But you know, it's okay. It's okay. And now I can take my story and I can help others. And so that's where I'm at. So the feminist poetry, I just love it. It's great stuff. There's also a book called Women Who Run with the Wolves. Have you read that one?
I've not, but I will.
That one is a powerful book. Dr. Clarissa Pinkola Estes is the name of the author of that one. And so I think that every woman on the planet should be reading Women Who Run with the Wolves. It's a great one. It talks a lot about intuition and how powerful your intuition is and how to respect your intuition and things like that. How to respect the more wild side of your femininity.